I think that will conclude me for now, Joe.
Okay, fantastic, Sean. As Sean said, if you want to get at this document that we've been showing on the screen, you can email Sean. And as I said at the beginning of the show, his website is seanoconnor.org. And I'll try to show that before we hang it up for tonight. Do we, Gary, been looking at the chats at all to see if there's anybody that had any questions? It doesn't look like a whole bunch of very many chats.
Well, Mike's got a question about the difference between Sean's publication that he was using and the one that Tommy wrote. If Sean's saying that this is the one that he's using on the screen is the one that he did, and of course there is one that Tommy did. I don't have a copy of Voice, but I'm sure you can find it on the internet.
Yes, you can. And I've seen it, and they track each other very, very closely. So, gee, if you have two independent people addressing this report and looking at this and coming up basically, well, even more than basically, with the same conclusions, I'm not an attorney. Tommy was an attorney. And yet we're sitting here looking at this stuff, researching it, reading it, and the same conclusions are being reached based not only upon what the law says, but what the IRS is trying to represent in their report. Well, I don't know. The score out of 3 is 2 for us, 1 for them.
I'll put this link. This is from the Truth Attack website. I'll put this link into the chat. But I left out, and I believe I found it. The real truth about the IRS's truth about frivolous tax arguments. That's so Tom Cryer. That's awesome. Yeah, so anyway, yeah, there is a version that Tom Cryer did, and also very thorough. So as I recall, Tom, not taking credit here, but I believe I mentioned to Tom, hey, you should check out the Free Enterprise Society. Sean O'Connor did an incredible rebuttal. And then, of course, Tom went to town and created one himself. So,
Gary, I think there's a question there from you, from Peter. Gary, you're muted.
Sorry about that. Peter was saying, I find that all the discussion about the definition is confusing. How can we be sure that the meaning of the definitions that you tell us are correct? Well, I'm just looking at the definitions as they're written. And for example, a United States person is a citizen. And then the 1.1-1 says every individual who is. And I think there's a Supreme Court case that talks about the words that are used in there should not be superfluous. And I don't believe that when they're saying every individual who is would be classified as a superfluous term. You match it up with finding a specific definition that embraces a citizen who's classified as an individual. And Joe, if we can go back to that section 911D, I'll add some things for Peter to consider.
Okay, stand by.
And if we could put 1.1-1A alongside, but I'll try to make a consistent comparison. Qualified individual, Peter, it says the term qualified individual means, number one, an individual, and let's make imaginary numbers, a number one individual, number two, whose tax home is in a foreign country, and then three, and who is a citizen or resident of the United States. That's D1B. if we break it down into three parts, and then let's take the second part out, and let's just read it without the Congress telling us where a citizen becomes a qualified individual, which is whose tax homes in a foreign country. The term qualified individual means an individual who is a citizen or resident of the United States. And since 1.1-1A is interpretive, and this definition is not interpretive,
but it's correct.
It's, I believe it's correct. Thank you, Larry. And there's other supporting authority on it in the regulations to Section 911, but you know, I don't think that it's worth going into at this particular point.
Well, would Peter like to be unmuted for discussion?
That'd be fine.
Okay, let me see how quickly I can do that.
I wonder if it's as hot in Vegas as it is in Phoenix.
95 here today.
Only 95?
Yeah. But I'll add that you know, with this section 911.
Peter is unmuted.
Okay, Peter, you're unmuted.
Yeah. So is a qualified individual the same as an individual?
No.
What's the difference then?
An individual is an alien. That's in 1.1441-1.
Wait a second. 1.1441. Okay.
-1
is an individual. Okay. And
C3.
Okay.
That's under the definitions. And so an individual is an alien.
Okay.
Alien individual.
It's 26 CFR, Joe.
Yeah. 26 CFR 1.1441-1.
Okay.
1.1441-1C3.
1441 is a section, you know, 1441 requires a withholding of the tax from a non-resident alien.
There you go.
30%.
And that kind of gets us back to the liability you were talking about, isn't it, Larry?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, the only section in all of Subtitle A, and this is the way it's been since, you know, after 1916, the only party statutorily liable for the federal income tax is the withholding agent for non-resident aliens and foreign corporations.
Section 1461.
Yeah.
Peter, does that answer your question? Or you're welcome.
Really. I just, there's so many terms and they're so buried in this language. I mean, it's just very hard to tease it all out and make sure that there's, you're not you, but that I'm not contradicting some other place in the code where that definition is qualified in some other way, like a resident or an alien. I mean, how you read it in one place, and how do you know that the apparent definition in that one place is not contradicted or qualified by a statement in some other place in the code?
Well, that's a very good question, and there's one thing that's left out, but it's not left out. It's basically kind of hidden from us. And Joe, if we could go back to 1.1-1A, I mean, there is a lot of fertile soil for planting the truth in 1.1-1. And for example, where
go down the page, Joe.
The Secretary of the Treasury says, to the extent provided in Section 871B and 877B. Now, I'm going to throw this back at you, you know, because what's left out of, what appears to be left out of the code imposes a tax on income of every individual who's a citizen or resident of the United States, it seems like they're leaving source out. But look at Section 871B and 877B. 871B talks about gross income earned within the United States by a non-resident alien. Yes, Larry. 877B will send you to 872B, Because if you look up 877B, it'll tell you, go see 872B, and it's talking about gross income earned by a non-resident alien. That's the source within the United States. So how do you construe source to be an individual who's a citizen? And let me be totally honest with you, because the very first time I read that back in the mid-90s, I read it and it said, I read it just like Section 1 of the code imposes the income tax on the income of every individual citizen. I said, hell, that's me. I mean, that's my first impression.
Well, it's just like everybody reads Section 1, it says individual, and they say, that's me.
Me.
And an individual, again, is what? What is the definition of an individual?
Individual is an alien.
Alien meaning a person who's not
not a citizen. For a non-resident alien individual is defined as 1.1440, 26 CFR, 1.1441C3.
Well, then how can an individual ever be a citizen? It says in the definition you just had up there, an individual who is a citizen or resident. How can an individual ever be a citizen?
Great question. Section 911 says, for purposes of this section. They're not saying for purposes of this title. They're just simply saying for purposes of this section. A qualified individual is an individual whose tax owns in a foreign country and who is a citizen of the United States. D1A.
I'm totally confused again, but that's okay.
Peter, that's the way they designed it.
I understand that, but I wish there were a way to break it down and footnote every word, and then with each footnote show all of the citations that clarify that term irrefutably.
Yeah, no, I understand that. That's what they do with, for example, they don't just do it with the term individual and qualified individual. Let me give you an example. When they use the term United States, I think I briefly touched on that. You can go through the Internal Revenue Code and find the term United States redefined. If you can find it once, you can find it at least two dozen different times, and they redefine it for a particular section when they don't like the general definition for that particular section. And the only way you can know it, that they've redefined it, is by actually going and finding that particular section you have an interest in and seeing if they have redefined the terms for that particular section.
And Peter, let me add, when I started scratching around in this, in the regulations and tying it in with Section 911, I ran it by Larry and Jeff Dickstein way back around 2007. And Larry says, hey, I never looked at it this way before. And Jeff Dickstein says, you're wrong.
Well, there's clarity in the law.
Well, but back to your point, Sean, then if the code or the CFR or the statutes can say, okay, here's the definition, and then later say, well, here's the definition for this section of the code, when you're looking at a section, how can you ever be sure what definition is applied to the United States or individual or alien or qualified individual if the definition can change in one section versus another section?
Oh, you described the problem dead on. How can anyone be sure? And that goes back to a tenet of the law, Peter, where it says the law is supposed to be understandable to the common man.
Well, yeah, void for vagueness otherwise, right?
Oh, at the very least. I think you're being generous.
Well, why can't we go into court? I mean, I know this is somewhat of a rhetorical question, but why can't we go into court and simply say, no human being can decipher this code 100% with clarity that's indisputably deciphered by another human being.
I agree with that.
Well, the Commissioner of Internal Revenue has already said that.
And so did Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
And that's the truth of the matter. And that is the problem, too. You can't have anybody declare it until you put yourself in jeopardy. There's something wrong with that. But again, you hit the nail right on the head.
In order for us to do something about the income tax to properly move it forward, you know, to get our issues to the forefront, there's going to be at least two aspects of that battle. First, there's going to have to be a groundswell of a large enough segment of the American society that's concerned about these issues. That requires us to educate those common Americans so that we can grow that crowd. But then in addition to growing the crowd, there's going to have to be political activity, and there's going to have to be legal activity. And those are the things that are going to be included in the solution to the income tax.
Yeah, Larry, how do you propose to educate more people? And you know me, Larry, I'm 100% with you. But when you come to these things, and it's such a tangle of spaghetti of words that most people are just going to throw up their hands and say, I'll just sign my form and hand over a fifth or a fourth of my income because I don't want to end up in court, and I don't want to go to jail, and I don't want to have my house levied. And we need to find some way to attract people that their attitude is understandably what I just presented.
True.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree.
One sure way that I know to do it is deprive the people of every individual of what they want the most and what they will fight for, and then they'll get up and fight. But like one person told me, leave Monday Night Football and a six-pack beer next to me, and I'm not going to fight for anything. I got all I want. That is one of our problems, is the apathy.
That's true, too. But just because somebody didn't have time to research doesn't necessarily mean that somebody else doesn't.
Right.
And, we got to look at it from the standpoint of growing an organization where everybody's on the same page and everybody's going to contribute to it and participate. And I think this, we're trying to do here is trying to open some minds and say, hey, this is confusing, but, you think about it, test it, and then you're going to wake up one day and say, God, that's right.
Peter, can I make a comment about the gradual evolution of the federal income tax laws? Yes. This is the way I think that they started off. And let's start with the 1916 era. I think when the Bruce Shaver case came out, they understood that they got to redraft everything. They came out with a proposed bill that was perfectly clear. Anybody would, a sixth grader sitting down and reading the bill would know who it applied to. Then once they had that complete bill, then they started pulling sections from it so that they know how what the pattern was like, but they could pull out sections and it wouldn't hurt the law. They would understand how it operated, but it would become more confusing to the people. So ultimately they came up, they knew in their minds how the tax operated, who it applied to. That was in the first draft of the bill, but now they pull sections from it to make it gray. And that's the way it existed for, from 1916, 1917, all the way up until they came out with the 1928 Act. Over time, what they have been doing is they've been doing a little thing here, a little thing there, to indicate, this is the way the tax operates. And they've done it in a very surreptitious fashion. So, if you don't move forward into time studying it, you're going to miss it. And the way that they operate today, this is the way all the tax professionals, this is the way the whole tax movement operates. Everybody looks at only the current code, ignoring the history, where you can see these, little things that are pulled off in the past that are there that you can't see in the current tax law because you don't know anything about the history. But if you know something about the history, then it becomes understandable. And that's, to me, over time, there's little things that are happening that make the tax laws more understandable, but it's also complex. Those are my comments about how it was drafted.
But when you get in court, Larry, as you were, back in March here and with your client, and the federal judge sits up there and people make comments and he just smiles as if he understands the law. He's just this brilliant guy and he probably doesn't know any of this stuff. And then he rules.
Federal judges don't know anything about them. Hey, I've had people in the Department of Justice that have admitted that. those lawyers that work for the Department of Justice, they are lucky to have had a tax course in law school. They come out of law school, they get a job with the Department of Justice. Hey, they looked at the tax code. They're familiar with Section 1. Hey, anybody can understand Section 1. Anybody can take a look at, Section 61, 62, 63. And then, anybody can understand Section 6012. And it's, so blooming clear. Anybody else that doesn't understand it like that, I have a memo that cites a senator back in 1916. Talking about, the only people who have any inkling about any belief about how it's clear, they're really crazy. And that observation still applies today. Those who think that it's perfectly clear are the ones that have absolutely no understanding about how the tax laws, they don't comprehend the complexity of it.
And it is indeed complex.
Yeah. I saw a comment here from somebody, Mike or somebody. Can we talk about building a plan in 3 weeks? I think that's a good suggestion.
Yeah, I need to.
I was just going to point out, and I know this probably isn't any big news to Peter or anybody else, but, if you look at this, Spygate that the Epoch Times did, and you have all the lines and all the people, and, I could foresee having to do a similar thing with the income tax to understand like what we present from week to week. But all we can do is kind of give you little pieces of it. And, none of us that I know of, at least unless the other guys made one and they didn't share it with me, we don't have a nice schematic like this where we can do that. And that's a deficiency. But Peter, am I kind of reading you that, in other words, if you could show where you could see everything kind of at a glance, of course it would be so much more understandable. And we don't have that tool currently. All we can do is kind of show you, the toenail of the elephant and the elbow and the knee. And, that's about all that we have to share at this point.
Well, yeah, and please don't mistake my frustration, you guys, it directed at you. It's not.
No.
It's okay. It's just taken. Okay.
I think that's how I usually am able to understand this stuff is, make diagrams and do it and then just build on it. And so that's something that's still a work in progress. We do have a lot of narrative explanations, illustrated, or an example of which would be Sean's rebuttal to the frivolous tax arguments publication by the IRS. But, more schematics and things like this. Of course, the sad thing is also, as we point out these, not anomalies, as we point out these truths, the IRS loves to take, they love to watch too, because then they go, oh, look, we got to sweep this stuff over the rug over here and over here. And we help them, we help point it out to them where to sweep.
Let's get back to Mike's plan. You see, what was it that he wrote? Got off my screen here. About 3 weeks. Can we discuss a plan for 3 weeks from now? I'm all for that. What's the idea? What kind of a plan should we be discussing 3 weeks from now? Because one thing that I do think about a lot when we do these webinars is a way to put this in a logical order every Wednesday that it can be followed by the people that, especially by the people that are attending on a regular basis. That sounds like a real big project, and I think it is, but put these together in such a way that one after another, one follows one after another, and they can relate back and explain what has been said and what's going to be said, if you understand what I mean. More of a logical manner of presenting what's going on. Is that what we should be looking at, do you think, Peter?
Well, I don't know. I was sort of drifting there while you were talking, but I mean, I think the idea of developing a plan, and Larry's been talking about this for years, and if we could figure out some kind of plan going forward, I like Joe's idea of coming up with a schematic. It'd probably have to be three-dimensional almost because of the complexity of the law, but maybe devote one of these sessions to people just presenting ideas, us in the audience and you guys fielding them, about what we can do to get more people on board to take this issue seriously. Because my sense is we're not going to get a lot of people with my interest or maybe the interest of other people here to look at the law as deeply as we have. And I've been looking at it for, 20 years. But if they could at least become interested and realize that they are being scammed, if they could get to that point where they had a firm understanding that they are being scammed, and maybe they can't fully explain how they know that, but they've reached that conviction.
Yeah.
Well, there's no question it's being misapplied grossly.
Well, if we got some additional time here, let's ask Mike if he wants to be on mic or unmuted and bring him in here.
Well, let's do this. I kind of reached this point where we have an hour and a half worth of material, and I do like to archive these shows, but if we go on, it makes it a lot more difficult to do so. So why don't we cut off the recording for tonight, basically call it a night as far as the recorded episode. And we appreciate everybody joining us tonight. We will continue this for a few more minutes, but we're going to go ahead and stop the recording. So anyway, join us every Wednesday. And of course, I got to put a plug in. Go to agentfortruth.com, the radio show tab, because it's really important for everybody to watch the videos that we're archiving. The more you watch, the more space they'll give me to put up more videos. So it's an easy, cheap way to have them playing in the background and tell friends about them and watch those videos, okay? And then,
I'm going to leave. I got to go home.
Okay.
So y'all can keep on going.
All right, so anyway, we're gonna stop the recording, so stand by here.